Hello, hello. Here we are again, coming to you from Broadcast Team Alpha. And, you know, that's the show for the thinking global citizen that is not afraid to step outside of the box and have a look around and find out what else of information should I know about that has been kept from me. Well, anyway, my name is Agi. I'm the host tonight, and my co-host Nori just couldn't be here, so we're going to have to miss her. And she'll be back next week. And we're coming to you from 40-plus different platforms all over the world, and because we're also transmitting on that is from Conscious Awakening Network. And you guys got to go and have a look at that, consciousawakeningnetwork.org, because they got 50 different shows over there, or nearly so, and all about the stuff that we really like to know about. And we are on Roku, 3 TV station, and a bunch of other social media platforms, so you'll find us just about everywhere. And before I introduce the guest tonight, I want to tell you also how to connect with us, because we do interact with the audience. All you have to do is just send us a comment or anything in the chat room, and we'll try to get back to you. And you can reach us through broadcastteamalpha.com and also Broadcast Team Alpha on YouTube. And that is the place. YouTube is the place to watch the shows, because that's the only place we can interact and we participate with you in the chat room. And we're also, Nori and I have created a think tank, a spiritual think tank we call the Mastermind Connection, and we do incredible things there, and we sometimes create out of seemingly nothing. If you want to be part of a spiritual think tank, send us an email to themastermindconnection@gmail.com, and we'll send you some information and a link to come and check it out for yourself and see what incredible things are going on there. And and also, if you like what you hear tonight, please subscribe. And the super chat is also open. So I want to welcome the guest returning to Broadcast Team Alpha. That is Mark Fiorentino. Yeah, and that's Italian. And he is the author of the book Master of Reality. And it's a book about the physics of the universe, in where he improves and he completes the work that Albert Einstein created, and especially on the unified field theory. And Albert had a lot of loose ends hanging out there by the time he graduated, you know, and went home. And Mark has finished a lot of that work. And especially when it comes to gravity, time, and what Albert called spooky action at a distance, or quantum entanglement. This is sometimes rolled into one ball, and it can be explained, and that is what Mark has done. And we're going to touch on that tonight, but he also had some spiritual experiences that led him onto this path and explained some of his equations, and I really want to hear about. See, Albert was working on a lot of different things, and we're going to hear some of that tonight also. And we may even touch on time travel. I know we did last time, but there is another question in there I was just itching to talk about. Now, Mark is a self-taught metaphysician who, that is, metaphysicians comes out of metaphysics. So he goes beyond what you have usually coming out of the physicists, because they are somewhat controlled in what they can talk about. Otherwise, they lose funding and all kinds of stuff happen that they don't like to see. And Mark is not subject to that. So he studied nature and things and how nature expresses itself through quantum language and also shows up in equations. So welcome back to the show, Mark.
Thank you, Augie. It's good to be here. Looking forward to the conversations tonight.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. I know last time we got really deep into it, but there was something that you mentioned kind of in the passing last time, and that is that you had some spiritual experiences, and they kind of changed your mind a little bit. They put you on a different path. And I would love to hear that. And I think the listeners out there, listen real close to this, because a lot of time we have things that we cannot explain, and it happens to us. Of course, the first thing we do is to run somewhere and try to find something to explain it away. But I think we should not do that. We should look at what happens to it, what we see or hear or experience, and look at it as a spiritual experience with a meaning in it. And that is what Mark did. So could you tell us about this, Mark?
Well, it really all there was two paths that started me in this direction that took 45 or more years to happen. But basically, discovering I had the same birth date as Albert Einstein,
Wow.
and when I was 10, and I started studying about him, I was requested to find a saint born on my birthday. But the only thing I could find was Albert Einstein and was on the calendar. And I started reading about him and unified field theory. So that was one push in that direction. The other came when I was 19 and an introduction into the spiritual realm when I decided to go to this place called Casadega in Florida. It's near Lake Mary. It's known there as the spiritualist capital of North America. At least it was in that time, as there was a town full of psychics. And a lot of people were getting trained there and doing readings there. And I heard about it through a professor at the community college I was going to. And I decided to get a bunch of us guys together, go there and have a reading. At that time, we called it more of a, not a reading, but a fortune. But now
Yeah.
they don't use that term anymore. So we went there in October, and it was a blustery gray day, and we went in two car loads, I and this one guy in one car and the rest of the guys in the other car. We got to Casadega. The wind was blowing hard. A branch broke from a tree and hit our friend's car. They got scared and they went to Daytona ahead of us. He said, "We'll catch up to you." So me and this other guy named Duff, Jeff Jones, we started knocking on doors, and there was little signs saying spiritualist, medium, psychic medium. The first door we tried, nobody came to the door. We tried again. The third time was the trick. We knocked on the door of a woman, older lady, maybe 50s, 60s. Her name was Martha McKay, and we both got a reading that day. From Martha. I went in first, and then Duff went in after me. And she gave me an incredible reading, told me about my future wife, my future children, my future job. She got all of that right. The first thing I remember her saying, the very first thing she said to me, in my final days, I would be a spiritual teacher. Which I thought was odd because I wasn't really into anything like that at the time. Just a kid trying to have a good time, party, whatever. N nothing, you know, going on in that direction. So I said, okay, well, that's great. And then I had a reading, what I would call very normal, you know. And then the other guy went in. Then we drove off to Daytona Beach. on that drive to Daytona Beach, I get a rude bit of a rude awakening. Duff says to me, well, that was something that she said about you, Mark. And I says, what? I had nothing special going on, you know, marriage, wife, children. She said, someday you were going to make a great discovery or some sort of invention or something of that nature, something really important. And I said, huh, I wonder why she didn't tell me in the meeting there, in the reading. And I immediately started to analyze that and say, wait a minute, that was deliberate. I believe definitely at that time she was talking to my spirit guides, which they introduced themselves to me somewhat during that reading. I have two, a male and a female. And they must have said not to say anything about that while I was in the room. Why? Because I would have asked questions. I would have started drilling deep because, you know, who doesn't want to discover something great or be maybe famous or whatever? You know, that's really kind of a key thing to focus on. So by having it done this way, I'm in the car on the way. There's no way I could ask any more questions. The thought is planted in my head from that point on. I can never really ever get it out of my mind entirely. It follows me the rest of my life. And then I start looking for verification. And over time, I meet other psychics that come to the community college to give lectures, like Russ Burgess, who came next. And I was in the auditorium recording the presentation for the library. And he gave a great demonstration of psychic abilities. He had himself blindfolded, coins put on his eyes, then tape, then layers of cloth and stuff. So he couldn't see the little slips of paper he was pulling out with questions on it. And I happened to get this piece of paper. I wrote my question, put it in the hat, went through the auditorium. They mixed it all up. And then putting it in front of him, he reached out and pulled a piece of paper out. As soon as he pulled the first piece of paper out, the hairs on the back of my neck went up. I says, I know he's got my paper. I just knew it. Mm-hmm.
And he did.
And he reads my question, but he can't see it, but he gets it. And he says, I have an extraordinary connection with you. And he gets my name right. And he says, this is unusual. He warned everybody else it's not going to work this well. So be aware of that. There's something about me that has this, you know, I thought, well, I played a lot of chess. Maybe that's it. I'm able to concentrate or whatever. And I asked the question, would I create some sort of big invention sometime? And he says, yes. But it will take much longer than you think. So that was the first confirmation from the first lady, Martha McKay. Then I had another encounter with the famous Ann Gaiman, who just passed away just a few months ago. I was able to talk to her on the phone one more time before she passed away, just to thank her for the readings that she gave me. They weren't really readings. They were just meetings we had at the college and on a radio show at one time. And I went to Anne because my mother was very sick. And I, you know, she was giving a lecture at the college. And I wanted to ask one question. My father was having a lot of help. And I thought, maybe I'll stop school, go stay with my dad, me and my wife, and we'll help take care of my mom through this critical period. And I just wanted to know, should I do that or continue in school? So something was nagging me about that. So when I went to talk to her, I walked up to her in the back of the auditorium, and she looked at me with wide eyes as I was approaching. And I can't remember if I got the question out or she answered the question before I even asked it. But the point is, she answered the question. She said, they came rushing by you, the spirit guides, angels, and said, do not quit school. This is very important. You must not quit school, which surprised me. I thought for sure I would get the answer to go, you know, help my mom and do that, which we did on the side anyway. But that was the assurance I needed that, well, this must be important that I go to this tech school. It was just an electronic school, which is always something I wanted to learn and do. And it had changed my life path definitely for the positive by going to that school. And so now there's sort of more confirmation because I'm collecting these incidences and trying to link them together into some sort of idea. There must be a life path or some sort of predestined thing going on here. And so I tried to keep gathering evidence over the years. You know, it would maybe be three or four more years before I go to another psychic with marital problems with my first wife. Her name is June Riggs. In that meeting, they give me more evidence. Evidence is really important in convincing you. I needed to know for sure there was another side, the afterlife, and that my parents, my mother had passed away by this point. And she came to me in that reading, and she said, your mother's here. She wants to tell you that, this is very important, listen to this very closely, that she's been sitting in the golden yellow chair in your bedroom at night when you've been praying to her and having a conversation with her. She's been there and she's heard everything. And that's exactly what I was doing. I would invite her to sit in the golden yellow chair. I never even spoke those words aloud to anybody, not even my wife. It was just a personal, private thing. And that to me is strong confirmation of the other side. Strong confirmation that mediums, real ones that are good, can converse openly and freely with the people on the other side. So there is another side. There must be a God, because there's another side, angelic one. So she also touched on this future invention, because I said, well, this time I'm just going to see what this lady says. And she says, yes, that's going to happen. But you're not ready yet. You don't have everything you need. So again, there's another confirmation. Now we're linking these over time, but people who have never met each other, all sort of confirming there's something coming. There's some sort of a pre-plan in place. This is the concept that's really sinking in, saying, okay, we all must come with some sort of a pre-planned thing that we have to discover and remember somehow. And then there was three more after that, the last one being, there was two more that said the same thing the first lady said, in your final days, you will be a spiritual teacher. And I thought that was interesting that they kept bringing that up.
Yeah.
There's inconsistency over like 40 years of time where that statement comes about. Somebody on the other side is telling them, in the exact words that they're saying. More
it
evident.
Was it was embedded in your master plan.
Right. And for everybody out there who's listening, you have one too. Nobody comes here just for the heck of it.
Everybody does, yeah. And in fact, I know you're exactly right, because I had an experience also decades and decades ago, back when I was still in Europe. There was a psychic in Romania when I was down there visiting. She told me a lot of the things that I ended up doing, I mean, over 50 years ago. But I got a question. What year did Albert Einstein die? Was it 53 or 55?
He died about 35 days after I was born. I was actually born in Middlesex, New Jersey, about 20 miles away from Princeton. Mm. He died in the Princeton Hospital in April 14th or 15th of 1955. I was born March 14th, 1955. We just missed each other. And he was right down the road from me, too.
Yeah, but that does not necessarily preclude something that I'm going to say next. And that is, have you ever thought that you might be a reincarnation of him for him to complete his work?
No, I mean, I kind of grazed my mind a time or two, but I never felt that. I deeply admire him and was able, with a conversation with Tamara Calder Richardson, who's now a very good friend of mine, a very mm-hmm. gifted psychic medium, that no, I'm not Albert Einstein. I could tell you some of that conversation, but it's beyond belief. It's so strange. But I had the opportunity to address or talk to Einstein on the other side through her, as he came in.
There is no such thing as beyond belief when it comes to our listeners and this forum, because we have covered a lot of that stuff. And just because there were a few days between the two of you being, he died and you born, knowing that outside of the physical, everything happens in the now. There, time does not exist out there so much. We have access to past, present, and future now. That could still bring him to where you were born. But I'm not going to dwell on that one because that is a little far out.
I have insider information to that. Albert and I do have a universal, timeless relationship. He claims that we were once brothers on another world.
Okay.
Take that as it...
That brings it closer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but that brings up something I have suspected for a long time, is that there are groups of people who have certain tasks that they're particularly good at. And they, called the Brat Pack on the other side, that they come down like the Newtons, the Einsteins, the Maxwells, the Lorenzes. These guys come down in an order and they enlighten the world with their knowledge and their gifts and in the world of science and physics. And maybe I'm a part of that team. We'll see how that all works out. All I know is I'm here to do certain tasks and perform certain operations so that information is out there, important information in the world of physics and metaphysics. And I'm happy to do that now. It's taken me a long time to realize and accept that. And, I'm not entirely comfortable with it because I'm in this body and I feel like a fairly normal, average kind of guy. And I was happy with my life all the way up till this point. Very simple, family man kind of guy. And this is something more, but I've accepted that because I'm figuring things out and I'm working things out mathematically and scientifically, and I'm able to explain things that make very good sense with math. And I presented it to physicists for analysis and review, and they don't really attack the math. They have problems with the interpretation, which I would expect because it's kind of hard to believe that the path that I've used is something that is still relevant, but it is. I've used the same math as Newton, Einstein, and Maxwell used, not the quantum mechanics, although I used one very early on quantum mechanics formula in this last discovery, which I just sent out the email newsletter today. You should have gotten it. Right.
And just the fact that you have some, should we call it, interdimensional connections and contact, that should prove something else. Would that snuggle up to the concept of the many world theory? With other words, it proves that this is not all there is. There is other realities.
Yes.
Can you speak to that?
It's getting very complicated, and it's mind-boggling to realize that, of course, there's more than one universe. Well, there's more than one planet. We now know that for sure. So let's out there, all the stubborn people are still arguing we're the center of the universe. We know that's not true. We're sure about that. And there's not just one group of people living on one single planet. The universe is teeming with life. There is not just one galaxy. There's trillions of galaxies with trillions upon billions of life forms. And there's not just one universe. I've read about many NDE people who've seen other universes, them lined up in this grand space, like little balls of light, our universe here, other universe there, another one on the other side, going on for infinity in all directions. Not only that, but there appears to be infinite dimensions and timelines.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling, and you start to think of it with this limited mind and trying to understand the infinite, and it's exhausting to go that way.
I've been talking about something for quite a while, and that is that we have a little say-so in what we can create for ourselves in the future by the way we think and create now. If we, let's say, want something to happen in the future, we can create it in our mind, place it in the future, and go back and forth and visit it every day, and we get drawn up that timeline. If we halfway up that timeline decide, I don't want that, I want something totally different, then create something different, and we peel off and create a new timeline. Can you agree some with that?
I don't know that you create a new timeline. It's possible. It's within the realm of possibility. I just now heard where some people have changed their, by negotiation, their life path.
Mm-hmm.
Actively while they're here, which is unusual. I could see maybe that happening on the other side. But there's a lot of choice involved in the pre-birth process where you pick your circumstances, what successes you have to some degree, and what failures, what hardships and so forth you're gonna encounter in life. These are experiences, and you can't have those experiences unless you go through it and have the actual experience. That's the whole point of this. So it's, I don't want to say that life is a game, because, people think trivializing the thing, but it's like it a little bit. It is a challenge, definitely. And it's a lot more sophisticated under the covers than we realize. There's a lot of things going on that the Supreme Being, God the Father, is completely in control of and aware of without determining your future. You still have free will. That is the key ingredient in this life experience. Free will traveling together with a pre-plan of some sort. So you got to weave your way. It's like a river flowing. You're born into the river at one point, and flow of the river is pushing you along with everybody else down this timeline, and you control where you are in the river and what sides of the river you go to and everywhere by your efforts and your abilities. And so you have free will working with your current circumstances and predestined path together to fulfill, your first best destiny, like they say on Star Trek. Really trying to do that. Everybody should be trying to do that. But when we're in the body, we tend to get lost in our desires, and sometimes we don't succeed. And that's part of the process too. Heroes often fail, and things you know, they have a bad life and maybe they'll commit suicide or whatever and have to go through it all over again or something similar to that. It's an ongoing eternal process.
Yeah. I got a question, but I want to first talk to the listeners for just a second. If you joined us late, we are talking with Mark Fiorentino. He is the guy that finished and improved on a lot of the work, but Albert Einstein left hanging when he graduated and went upstairs. Well, I hope upstairs and not the other way.
He's upstairs, believe me.
Yeah, he's upstairs. But I want to ask you, you mentioned the Supreme Being. Are you seeing that Supreme Being also similar to or equal or the same as what people call God?
Yeah, God to me has I've come to realize is a universal being. Mm-hmm. And I give you an example. We have all these many religions, and they're really different roads that go to the same point. Mm-hmm. The Muslim religion, the Christian religion, the Hindu, they're really worshiping the same being. And I can prove that to you with a near-death experience that happened to three people at the same time. They were struck by lightning all together at the same moment. One was Christian, one was Muslim, and one was a Hindu. They all went up the tunnel together. They all were standing in the light with the Supreme Being, God. Mm-hmm. And each one, as they looked at that God, saw their version, a Christian version, a Christ-like version, the well of souls and a Krishna-like version or some other type. And as they looked back at each other, they could see the other one was seeing this different version, but they were seeing this other one. It's all the same being. We're worshiping the same. There's only one, and all these other different names is just applying a certain structure so that people can follow this path and that path to learn to about God, the universe, where our place in the universe, and everything that is important to all of us is with this Supreme Being who's infinite love. Father Rick Wendell, who's on my website, made a great video. It's on the internet. It's on my website. I have a link to it. And he says this, there's just one commandment for man, love one another. If we do that, we fix everything in this world. Crime will drop to zero. There'll be no more wars. There'll be no more lying, no more stealing. No, because you wouldn't hurt somebody you love. And that's the problem here. We're not loving one another and caring about and compassionate. And it's hard when we're in these bodies because our desires and emotions that are part of the human experience and the brain and so forth get in the way of these things sometimes. We lose our morality and our spiritual direction. It's we have to get back to that, and that takes work. And yeah. It's what God says to Father Rick is relevant to our conversation. And is relevant to my theory of super relativity because it's an intelligent design theory. He mm-hmm. says, all of this three-dimensional world is within God. So that's the simulation. We're inside of him. And he is inside of us. There is nothing outside of God. Everything within this physical universe has to correspond to laws. And God set those laws. They are immutable as God is immutable. None of this, what we see and experience, is an accident. It is intentioned by God. That's how the universe was, in fact, created. And that's I talk about in three chapters of my book about the creation of the Big Bang, according to what I determined was the real Big Bang and why it happened, what it was made of, and how it transpired.
Yeah, and
a beautiful thing.
And then we have the saying, God is love. And then again, we have preachers, ministers, and religion telling you that if you don't do what we tell you, God's going to be mad at you. That's the wrong guy. If it says that in your holy book, that God they're talking about was an Anunnaki. He was not the supreme being. That is love.
Humans have rewritten things and muddled the works. And so now God is misunderstood. Jesus is misunderstood. We humans have kind of messed up the message and altered it and so forth. So that's something that's got to be overcome. Just know that if it's not teaching love, compassion, kindness, and charity, and all these things, it's not from God. That's something mankind has cooked up.
Yeah, and there's a lot of that out there. And
there's a lot of that out there, yes. But God wants, this is what many NDEers say, God wants to have a personal relationship with each and every one of us. Doesn't really care which religion it is. Talk to God, pray. He hears every prayer. Everyone is at the center of God's attention. Every grain of sand on every planet throughout the entire universe is at the center of God's attention. It's hard for us to conceive that, but it's pure knowledge and love. This supreme being that we are a part of, and he is within us.
When it comes to have a personal relationship, it would probably mean that everybody have a contact. We are connected with God as one with God, but we sometimes we block it. So we don't get that. And then we stray off and do things that is not necessarily for the highest good.
Right.
Like I have a saying, I've been using it for God knows how long, and that is that it would stagger the mind to imagine how far humanity would have gotten was it not for religion and government.
Both are definitely getting in the way because they want to become the authority.
Yep.
Really, there's only one authority. And that's why government wants to get God out of things a lot of times, because they don't want that to be the authority. And religion, you know, they want the church or whatever to be the authority through their laws that they're making up and so forth. And it's money, power, greed, all of those kinds of vices and sins are getting in the way of humanity's knowledge and happiness. Definitely.
Yeah.
I would agree with you.
We've had a very spiritual talk here, and I really fully enjoyed it. But let's maybe also satisfy the nuts and bolt people out there a little bit too, because I'm going to ask you about, I don't talk a lot about this, but I, on broadcastteamalpha.com in the picture gallery, I think it's page 15, I have two pictures sitting next to each other. They are taken at the same time, one continent away from the United States, but the pictures are different. One of them has rain on the road and the other one doesn't. One has leaves on the trees and the other one doesn't, because I did a time experiment, a mind experiment at the time. And I was able to tap into something. So two different times I took a picture, but it ended up at the same time because I intended it to be at the same time. And the pictures show different, but they were taken at the same time. How does that fit in with time travel and maybe switching between timelines? Is there something in the equations that could explain how I was able to take those pictures?
Not in my equations. Maybe there's other equations or something. I do a chapter on time, and I really focus on our timeline, how that system works. Whereas I've come now to realize, since I've written a book, that there's not only our timeline, thinking of as a rope that's going forward, infinitely going backwards and infinitely going forward, but the forward part is frayed, where there's all these lines, you know, maybe even an infinite amount. And I suspect strongly now there's parallel timelines going along with ours, that there's multitudes of us and all these other ones.
Yep.
And I hate thinking about this stuff sometimes because it gets out of hand, and that they're all going forward. And maybe there's some people, they talk about jumping from one line timeline to another accidentally by some means or method. Taking that into consideration. But my whole thing about this timeline is that we have time here, whereas on the other side, they're outside of time. God is outside of time. So if you want to time travel, you have to get outside of time.
Exactly.
Maneuver yep. up or down this segment. Just keep it simple. Let's stay on our segment, our unique segment, and go forward or back. Then there may be a possibility with some sort of advanced technology to jump to a different timeline. Why somebody would want to do that, I don't know. Seems like you want to focus mainly on your own timeline and alter things, which is nightmarish if you go backwards, the things that you could badly mess up if you do it. I'm very much against time travel, especially in the reverse direction. I can maybe tolerate somewhat the forward direction, but the reverse direction, I don't care for.
Yeah, and altering
things.
I totally agree, because can you imagine what would happen if everybody was able to time travel? They would go back and screw up the past and screw up the future. And it would be a mess. But on the other hand, too, if they follow the rules, so to speak, you still got to be careful. Because I know there are people that have built time devices and they are missing. I know of two of them. One of them I actually talked to one time before he finished his work, and that's over 20 years ago now. He's missing. He's never showed up anywhere. So there is something to this. And in 2003, BBC Television came over to the United States, and they did a TV documentary on time travel. And I was on it. Michio Kaku and Green was on it. And we talked about time travel. Is it possible? And I explained my experience that I've had with this electronic device that created a phenomenally strong magnetic field around you. And this was probably one of the reasons why I was able to do what I did.
Yeah. My research, and I touch on this, I believe, in the book, is magnetic resonant fields are known to be associated with dimensional portals and time portals. The dimension is really another kind of way of saying time dimension. So you hit on something that really rings a bell with me, and I can acknowledge and say magnetic fields, especially resonant fields that are, you know, oscillating high frequencies and whatever, seem to be able to open portals that you can leap across to another time or another time dimension or in another dimension. And I'm sure our alien friends, a lot of them travel in this mode now because it's much higher, more sophisticated, efficient mode of travel than using the warp drive technology that I'm working on.
Yeah.
I'm working on just simple entry level warp drive technology that when I a population is emerging into this higher consciousness and level, this technology shows up so that they can travel into interstellar travel and visit other cultures and societies and, you know, start to learn more about the greater universe. And but these guys using something similar to your device, yeah, you got to be careful with really powerful magnetic fields. They can
yep, absolutely,
surprising results.
I was experimenting with it one time. I put it close to the TV, I mean the cathode ray tube on the computer at the time, and there was a big blue spot in the middle, and it was totally destroyed. I couldn't use it anymore, so it destroyed the computer for me.
Yeah, but you magnetized the screen.
Yeah, there. And I also know that science now is starting to accept that there's things outside of Newtonian physics, because NASA is now putting together an engine, hyperdrive, and they have experimented with it, and they actually see that it works. With other words, it could facilitate faster than light travel. You remember Einstein said, beyond the speed of light, we're on our own, right? It's well, coming.
Well, my equations explain how that's done.
Yeah.
That paper I just talked about in this email
last
today
time.
Is,
yeah.
Is the slip wave. That's the way to create a warp field that allows you to go faster than the speed of light. So they would have to use the method I'm describing. I don't know. I'm not familiar with what you're saying, what hyperdrive that they're using, or, but it's probably something related to Thomas Townsend Brown's work.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
that's what I'm using. And I got a lot of my confirmation from studying him. I just recently been studying his work and stuff, looking, and his, my equation that I derived up on my own, I saw in some of his notes. So that gave me chills. I know why that equation's in there. I know exactly what it means and what it's doing. I know why he used it. I know why I used it. So that's confirmation to me that I'm on the right path.
Yep.
Because it's remarkably simple once you understand the mechanical model, which he had a great understanding for, more than anybody realizes. And I think that the government, the military, because he was in the Navy, they let him go to a certain extent, but I think they already had a lot of the information because they were reverse engineering UFOs, but he was discovering it on his own. And I kind of continued that path along with working with Einstein's equations, merged the two so that we have a complete explanation for particle motion, which is the same model used for extraterrestrial interstellar flight, the warp field in the form of the slip wave. And my next two projects will be the electrogravitic model and the magnetogravitic model. Once I complete those two things, I'll have completed the newest version of a unified field theory that includes not only electromagnetism and gravity, but two new forms of gravity, gravity 2 and anti-gravity. A complete explanation for how to break the light speed barrier. It's incredibly important and challenging work, but I'm within reach of it all now.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember we talked about that last time quite a bit. And I think what NASA is doing goes along with this, because in the notes that I read about that is that they create this warp field around the device or the engine, call it the engine. I'm not so sure if we should be called an engine, but it's a drive maybe. And the warp field is stronger behind you than it is in front of you, so it pushes you forward. And it keeps pushing and pushing and never stops pushing, so it goes beyond the speed of light. Could that make sense?
it's very close to what I'm doing. My sleep wave is basically in the front part is gravity two, which is a linear type of gravity, a straight line coming out of a dipole. And that is attractive. So it's pulling forward. And the other end is the anti-gravity side of the dipole, and it's pushing or chasing the front part. And that's the warp drive. But there's more things going on than the pushing and the pulling. There's also an expansion of that space, which causes permittivity and permeability to drop, which then breaks you away from inertia and allows this very fast space travel. And once you've mastered all of that electronics and field generation, you've really mastered the ability to break the light speed barrier. And it would be thrilling to see what it looks like when you get to the light speed and go beyond. I think I know what it looks like, and I've envisioned it, and it's pretty weird looking, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and then we hear again that the Pleiadians, they traveled from their star system to here in a matter of a very short time. So they also say that inside the ship, everything looks the same. We don't turn into energy. We're still us because we are submerged in that bubble.
Right. That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're like your own realm, and you're traveling within this realm. The space has been transformed into something that's like you're in there. You feel some gravity coming up from, let's say you have some gravity wave emitters at the bottom of the ship. Mm-hmm. The actual one coming up is actually the gravity two, which gives you an ability to be pulled down. Even though anti-gravity is being emitted from the bottom half of the gravity wave, it's just like a bar, you know, an emitter. And so you can sit, you can stand, and then you could have other emitters around the perimeter, and they can pull you and thrust you forward. But the important thing is you want to be within this field, this warp field, so that you're in this realm. Otherwise, if you're not, you'll have inertial leakage, which will kill you instantly at speeds close to the speed of light or beyond.
Yeah.
So it's important that you're in this bubble the whole time. And never, ever do you bring down the warp field while you're moving faster than the speed of light. That would be instantaneously terminal. Everything, the ship, everything would be flattened. Mass would go up to becoming a black hole, and that would be the end of the existence of that starship and the people in it. You must slow down first relative to the ether, the stationary field, the fundamental field. You must slow down relative to that, and then bring down the warp drive field. That's the safe way to do it. So there's a lot of work to be done to make sure that these devices that we make are safe. Redundancy needs to be built into the system so those emitters don't fail during flight. There's a tremendous amount of thinking that's got to go into all of this.
I hope we can make it better than some of the extraterrestrials do, because I hear that their ships keep crashing all the time.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure if we're doing some of that, or I think the one in Roswell got struck by lightning. And if it's an electrogravitic model and you hit it with lightning, it's going to mess it up.
Yeah,
for sure.
Something happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, then it's kind of hard to get around that. Even though I've seen airplanes actually been struck by lightning, but they have a way to diffuse it through that, and out they have almost look like antennas at the wings in different places.
Yeah,
so you can diffuse.
a Faraday shield-like thing going on where it's vented around the hole, the metal, and dissipates.
Now, you have written quite a few papers, and they are being well-received. Like you said, maybe not because they may not agree by the reason why you came up with the equations, but they cannot argue the equations. Where can people read about these the papers that you have written?
Well, there's two links now on my front page of my website, www.super-relativity.com, where you could just click on the link. It takes you right to the papers, so you can read them for yourself.
Oh, yeah.
So far, the physicists I have read them, they're having trouble understanding them. So I rewrote the one, and revised edition is now up with definitions right at the front to help them, guide them in understanding. So when the first time I say gravity 2, they know it's a special type of gravity, not like Einstein's and Newton's gravity, the planet's gravity. It's a different type of gravity. It's a different type of deformation of space. Mm-hmm. And I try to get into that explanation in the papers so that they have a fighting chance of understanding the mechanical model. The model that I see in my head and how it works is remarkably simple. But getting that out onto paper for people to see it, because, you know, we each have our own minds and we're thinking and we're using words to pass on meaning, which is not the best way. Direct infusion is much better, but that only happens when we're in the afterlife, not here. We have to use language, we have to use math to explain the abstract ideas and prove that those ideas are more than abstract. They're actually a physical representation of what's happening, the model, the mechanical model that explains this universe. And that ain't an easy thing to do. I spent 9 months writing this paper. Overall, it's probably been now a year since I finally uploaded it. I spent 4 years writing the book. It's really, you know, you got to struggle with the language. You got to struggle with the meaning and trying to project imagery that helps people understand the foundations of reality. That's what I'm really working on. So we could build starships. That's the end goal.
Well, that explains the title of the book, Master of Reality. If the listeners out there want to find out more about the reality that goes beyond what the normal, I call it normal, scientists talk about, then you need to have that book in your hand and go through it. Make notes when you go through it so you can remember better, and make sure it looks like a mess when you're done, because then you can go and read it again and all you read is your notes and you got it.
The more you read it, the more it will make sense.
Yeah. Yeah, and we are pretty much out of time here, but your website is super. Is there a dash in the middle of super?
Yes, super-relativity.com.
There you go. And go in there and look at those papers, because they will explain deeper probably than what you were able to put in the book, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and beyond. I've gone beyond the book now. This last paper is new. From the book didn't have gravity 2, and this anti-gravity type information in it. It had a suspected type of anti-gravity, which I thought at the time would just come from any kind of a magnetic field or electrostatic field. I now know it's really a polarized field of gravity and anti-gravity, gravity 2, which is a different type. This is hard for everybody to get used to. Why is there two types of gravity? But you have to get that in mind, and my descriptions kind of help you separate what the difference is between those two. And it's important to get that down pat in your mind understood, then the math will make sense.
I still think that there is a really deep connection between you and Albert Einstein. Otherwise, you wouldn't have gone down this path unless there was a contact. You got the information from somewhere, because Albert Einstein may have percolated on this. He may have had it in his mind and not be able to write it down by the time he graduated.
Yeah. No, he was born too early. Otherwise, he would have worked through all of
it. Yeah. Some of
it. I know we're out of time. I could give you an example of what I'm talking about. His study of the motion. I also studied the motion of particles, and very few people realize that Einstein needed to know the cause of particle motion. And so I decided to work on that as well. And that's the solution we have in this paper.
And I have studied Einstein deeper than a lot of people. And I found that he had, in the early days, he had a mentor, and he had someone that he was discussing things with that went way beyond what people know and so on. And that was his wife.
Believer. American.
She was a very highly educated and sharp physicist.
Mm-hmm.
So they got some good ideas out of the melting of the mind between the two of them. Anyway, gosh, I sure thank you for being with us again, Mark, because this has been good.
Great. I hope we got some good information out there.
Yeah. I would like to have you back. There's so much more we could talk about. I would like to have you back on again sometime. And maybe we could
talk about star formation.
Yeah. All right. And for the listeners out there and the viewers out there, if you like what you heard today, please subscribe. And until next time, be good to each other. See you in the next one. Well, Mark, I think we're down to the end here. So
it's a wrap.
Yep. It's a wrap.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you have a good evening, and then we will call it quits this time. But I do want to have you back on.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe in a month or three we can do that.
Yeah. There's plenty of interesting things to talk about, particularly the star formation, the Big Bang Theory. We could go through that. I could fill an hour with that very easily, and it's very interesting and sensible.
Yeah.
When you finish hearing it, you say, this has got to be right. Nothing else makes sense.
Absolutely.
So we can talk about that if you want.
Yeah, because I guess if Mark is not able to shut us off yet, then we can just keep talking a little bit. But I know that you are on the trail of something here that is, in its potential, can change the way that mankind looks at science, as well as how we can become a star-traveling or star-fearing society.
Right. That's my ultimate goal.
Yeah.
And I finished these two papers. And there's other things that I didn't talk about that I won't talk about or hint at even that I'm working on, experimentally speaking, to help this along. The two together should get the job done. And I would love to see us have hovercraft and be able to scoot along the surface of the earth at 20 or 30,000 miles an hour and be able to get to places anywhere in the world in a matter of just a few minutes instead of a day or two. I would love to go to Tahiti in 10 minutes and have lunch there on a beach
There you go. And then we have these transport pads that is being worked on. You may have seen that. There was a video on YouTube that actually they talked about they actually doing this. And then the power of the mind goes beyond everything that we can imagine. I saw there's also a YouTube video on, there's some kids in China. They are doing teleportation. That looks like, oh, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 year old kids. They had two jars, one over here and one in another room. The one over here had a bug in it. It looked like a spider or something. And the kids were sitting there looking at it, intending for this bug to show up in the other room under that jar. And the camera was on it. And the bug disappeared. And then they had a camera at the same time in the other room. And by golly, the bug showed up in the other room. This is mind teleportation by kids.
Well, that may be real or it could be fake. I don't know.
There you go. Yeah, it could be.
You know, there's a, oh my gosh, in this UFO community, there is a lot of disinformation.
Yeah, it is.
And a lot of it, I'm sure, is being put by the government. These guys that are coming out and leaking stuff, a lot of them aren't telling the whole story. And there's deviations, and some of them are just making them. Like Corey Good and these guys, holy cow, they're just making stuff up. And you don't know what to believe. And
That's maybe true.
They're doing teleportation. I can tell you right now, if they could truly do that, they would be very dangerous to the government.
Oh.
And the government would put an end to them more than likely.
Yeah.
Because they could, you know, get to the top people and make them disappear. And that's a threat.
Yeah.
So if it's real, then it's something that we all have to be concerned of. Because if their government gets a hold of it, they'll use it on us. There's other things I can't even get into.
Yeah.
I wish I could, but I can't.
Well, you know, the we have had basically 100 years from horse and buggies to doing what we do today.
It's amazing.
Can you imagine what would happen or will happen in 1,000 years from now, unless, of course, governments end up ending it all in this big blow up that we are looking at right now?
Yeah. And there's people out there that are archaeologist type people that claim that this, we've been this far before and wiped ourselves out.
Yeah.
And I'm beginning to think that's true. That's what's happened.
I'm wondering if Mac has some challenges at the other end here by closing the show down, but we probably should end it anyway. So we will see you later, folks.
All right.
And I will just go ahead and end it at our end, and then that will end it at his end too. Maybe that's what he's waiting for in case he's got technical challenges over there.
I don't know.
All right. Take care.
Okay.
Yep. See you later.